There's no evidence whatsoever that these people feel any kind of particular ethnic loyalty or commitment, because were that the case, then you should have seen that come out in the 1960s, or any kind of real anguish or despair about the Nazi Holocaust. If that were true, you should have seen that in evidence before, and I want to emphasize, before it became politically convenient to remember the Nazi Holocaust and be pro-Israel. When it was inconvenient to remember it, these people were nowhere to be found, neither at commemorations for the Nazi Holocaust, of which there were a few by leftists, or in support of the State of Israel. And that's why I also think it's completely wrong-headed to describe these people, as is often the case in a kind of hackneyed fashion, to describe these American Jewish elites as being Zionists, or to discuss the Zionist lobby. They are not Zionists, and to call them that is totally to, I think, mislabel the nature of the beast, as it were, because they have no ideological commitments at all, apart from the commitments to themselves. They're interested in power, and they're interested in privilege. It happens to serve that personal agenda now to be pro-Israel and to remember the Nazi Holocaust. In the 1950s, when it didn't serve the agenda of personal aggrandizement to be pro-Israel or remember the Holocaust, they didn't remember it at all, and they didn't care about Israel. If you want to talk about Zionists, you know, Ben-Gurion, yes, he was a Zionist. He was ideologically committed to the idea that a Jewish state was the best thing for the Jewish people and that it would solve their problems. He was ruthless, no question. He was fanatical, no question. But he was an ideologically committed Zionist, and which meant, incidentally, he was ruthless, he was fanatical, he was also, by most conventional standards, you'd have to say, he was honest. He didn't do it for the privilege, and he liked power, but I don't think it was for him fundamentally about power, and it certainly wasn't about privilege, you know, living well. These were committed, ideologically committed people. You know, say what you want about Begin, and I don't have any good things to say about him, though he did have, you know, to his credit, even though all the labor governments practiced torture beginning from the early 1970s, as Amnesty International points out, Israel was routinely torturing Palestinians. It is true to say that Begin was at least committed enough to the rule of law that when he came to power in 77, he abolished torture of Palestinians, and that endured until 1981. So he has something to his credit. But the point I was going to make about Begin was, when he left office, he went back to his little apartment in Tel Aviv, and he lived very modestly, you know, till his death. It wasn't about power and privilege for them. These were committed, ideological people. The folks we're talking about now, the Canadian Jewish Congress hoodlums, the ADL hoodlums, the B'nai B'rith hoodlums, the World Jewish Congress hoodlums like Israel Singer and that crowd, they're not interested in ideology. And it has nothing at all to do with concern about the Jewish people. This is pure power and privilege. It's not ideology, and I think it's completely mistaken and wrongheaded to describe them as Zionists. Hoodlums, for sure. Crooks, no doubt. Thieves, unquestionable. Ruthless, yes. Reckless, yes. Zionists, no. I think it's a distinction. And I have to, you know, I don't like what they did to Palestine, for sure, but I have to give them credit. You know, it's a kind of credit. I admit it, these are moral gray areas. But I have to give credit to the commitment. You know, someone like Abba Eben, he graduated, I always forget whether it's Oxford or Cambridge, which is it? Oxford. He graduated with triple honors, which is a real feat. You know, he boasts about it in his autobiography, and he has a right to. It was a very impressive show. He graduates with triple honors. He had a beautiful British accent, elocution, which, you know, could seduce a hyena. Yeah, he was impressive. Aben could have gone anywhere. He could have done anything with his life. He devoted it to the cause. And don't get the idea because he knew he was going to be important. No. The Zionist movement was a nullity on the political map back then when he joined in. He joined in from conviction, joined in from belief, and to some extent I have to say I respect that. It's a totally different animal than the one we're dealing with now, the crooks who are claiming to be concerned about the fate of the Jewish people. That was the Holocaust industry, and the most recent version of the Holocaust industry is what's called the new anti-Semitism. And the new anti-Semitism is the new card that's being played by the same folks who played the Holocaust industry card. And it's as politically motivated and politically driven as the Holocaust industry card. First of all, the most important point to keep in mind is there's nothing new about the new anti-Semitism. Well, what do I mean by that? If you go back to 1974, there's a book that comes out by two guys from the ADL. The ADL is the B'nai B'rith Anti-Defamation League. They specialize in defamation of character of anyone who disagrees with Israel. So the ADL comes out with a book in 1974 by the heads of the ADL, by their heads, namely these two fellows named Arnold Forster and Benjamin Epstein. What's the title of the book? Well, this is a good public library, so I suspect they have it. You can go and check your own, you can check the card catalog or the computer terminal. The title of the book is The New Anti-Semitism. You go to 1982, the head of the ADL at that time is a fellow named Nathan Perlmutter, and together with his wife, Ruth Ann Perlmutter, they put out a book. What's the title of the book? It's called The Real Anti-Semitism. What's it about? Well, look at the first page. It's about the new anti-Semitism. Every 15 or 20 years, they play this new anti-Semitism card. They play it every time Israel is in trouble. So in 1974, it's right after the October 1973 war, and because of, among other things, the Arab use of the oil weapon, new pressures are put on Israel to fully withdraw from the Egyptian Sinai. And as Israel begins to feel the pressure to withdraw from the Sinai, they start playing the new anti-Semitism card. In 1982, Israel is experiencing pressures again, because by this point, the PLO, the Palestine Liberation Organization, has joined the international consensus supporting a two-state settlement of the conflict. Well, this is for Israel a catastrophe, because they have been trying to write off the Palestinians as terrorists who want to throw them into the sea. But now the PLO is officially on board supporting the two-state settlement. And there's a nice expression, if you look in the mainstream Israeli scholarship on the topic, a fellow named Avner Yaniv from Tel Aviv University, he wrote a book called Dilemmas of Security, and he says Israel faced a real problem in 1982. The problem was, now I'm quoting him, the PLO's peace offensive. This is a real problem. It's amusing that they don't even use these expressions with irony. The PLO's peace offensive, we have a real problem here. And so along comes the American Jewish elites, and they turn out a book called The Real Anti-Semitism, saying that all of this criticism of Israel is motivated by anti-Semitism. What's really striking when you go through these books, and I have in recent months reread them, what's really striking when you read them is not only at the broad level, but at the level of detail, it's a question of everything old is new again. So let's take this current hysteria. I don't know how it played out in Canada, but in the United States there was this whole hysteria over Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ. Everybody was up in arms, you know, there's going to be pogroms in the street. Jews, you know, were afraid to pass the Lowy's Theater because they were going to be attacked. And everybody was joining in this profound debate about the meaning of Mel Gibson's film. You know, I thought I was on Mars. Whoever cared about anything Mel Gibson ever said about anything? Whoever thought he had a clue of an idea in his head? The only thing I ever remember about Mel Gibson, I'm not a film goer, I admit, I remember there was a graduate student, she was a Lebanese graduate student at Columbia University. She now works for the IMF. She sold out. She was on the left back then. She once said she liked Mel Gibson's behind. That's sort of the only thing ever stayed in my mind about him. And everybody is talking about, you know, analyzing Mel Gibson on the Bible. Whoever thought Mel Gibson was a biblical scholar? You have to be a moron to believe this to begin with. You know, it's like, I remember 10 years ago, I was reading these articles about the meaning of Michael Jackson's latest lyrics. You know, like we're talking about Yeats or Shakespeare. Whoever cared about Michael Jackson's lyrics, their meaning? And it was this kind of insane hysteria. Who initiated it? It's interesting who initiated it. It was initiated, as some of you may know, by Abraham Foxman. That's an interesting, the head of the ADL, you know, the organization which specializes in defamation of character. So I was curious, if you go back and look at the new anti-Semitism, it's worth it. It's for fun. You go, I know you're thinking he must have a very boring life if he thinks that's fun. And you're right, he does. You go back to look at the new anti-Semitism, the Epstein-Forster book, the Forster-Epstein book, and a centerpiece of their evidence for the new anti-Semitism, a centerpiece is Jesus Christ Superstar, the movie. They say that that's evidence of the new anti-Semitism in 1974. And all the arguments, I mean literally, all the arguments they use to prove that the Jesus Christ Superstar was anti-Semitic, they're lifted whole cloth and they reappear during the whole hysteria over Passion of the Christ. And it's quite striking. If you look at the acknowledgments page of the new anti-Semitism, who's acknowledged? Abraham Foxman. You look at the Nathan Perlmutter, Ruth Ann Perlmutter book, The Real Anti-Semitism, who's on the acknowledgments page? Again, it's Abraham Foxman. It was just stealing a page, literally, from an old book. He knew it worked well back then. He tried it again, and he was quite right. He knew exactly what buttons to press, and the whole hysteria would start again with the new anti-Semitism. It's kind of funny. In the 74 one, I don't know, many of you won't, who would remember, who would want to remember, the music for the Jesus Christ Superstar, the big anti-Semite back then, was Andrew Lloyd Webber. For those of you who don't know, he went on to produce many other big anti-Semitic productions like Cats, you know. As somebody said this afternoon, wasn't that K-A-T-Z? Yeah. That was a young person, clever. Well, what does the evidence show about this new anti-Semitism? Let's leave aside North America, because the heart of the argument, the heart of the problem, the heart of darkness is supposed to be in Europe. That's what they're pointing to. That's the heart of the new anti-Semitism. I hear that Canada's getting high up on the list.